Here are the WGXC headlines for Wednesday, March 1st. Voters in Chicago did not re-elect incumbent Mayor Lori Lightfoot in voting that ended February 28th. She finished third to Paul Vallis and Brandon Johnson, who will meet in a runoff to be the next mayor of the nation's third largest city. The ruling All Progressives Congress Party candidate, Bola Tinubu, won election as president of Nigeria, it was announced on March 1st. He won 37% of the vote, and the candidates finishing second and third will likely challenge the results in court. A head-on collision between a passenger train and a freight train in Greece killed at least 36 people and injured some 85, officials said March 1st. On December 9th last year, New York Governor Kathy Hochul vetoed a bill that would have required most freight trains to be operated by at least a conductor and an engineer, a safety measure that both rail unions and bipartisan lawmakers supported. But railroad companies and business groups opposed it, and now Hochul claims train safety is her top priority after an Ohio train disaster in early February. An overwhelming majority of Ulster County lawmakers have signed onto a letter opposing a proposal by the State Department of Environmental Conservation to shift to the county the responsibility for making decisions about muddy releases from the Ashikan Reservoir. The Greene County Legislature authorized an agreement with the Greene County Emergency Medical Services Council to provide training fees for a new group of EMTs. And Albany Distilling's ALB Vodka will be sold at all Yankee Stadium bars this season.
Hi, I'm Laura from Hudson at the Hudson Farmers Market. You're listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM, hands-on radio.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And we have a very busy morning show this morning. We're going to hear from WGXC's Randall Martin and Kim Singletary talking to Columbia County Fair Housing Officer William Fisher about local housing issues, as we're in the midst of an affordable housing crisis locally. We'll also hear about what movies are playing locally from Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty from their Dim the Lights show last night. And we'll hear national headlines from the Public News Service, the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate, and more on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned for it all. After Jason Martin from Troy finishes singing this song, it's time for the local news on the WGXC Morning Show.
Turns the blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years. Offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sabisha Friedberg of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXE Daily News for Wednesday, March 1st. Go to the WGXE newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Joshua Solomon reports in the Times Union that Democrats in the state Senate are questioning whether public financing of campaigns will be ready to take effect in 2024 as planned. They are using the excuse of the delayed redistricting in the Assembly to put off the public financing of campaigns. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said, quote, "Certainly the Assembly is going through redistricting. It's part of the things that people are talking about," unquote. Public financing of elections in 2024 would give Assembly candidates up to $350,000 in matching contributions from small donations in both the primary and general election. The idea is to reduce the influence of big money campaign donors and give small donations more weight. Governor Kathy Hochul's proposed budget has $25 million to fund the program and an additional $4 million to fund 54 new staff members for administration. Republicans oppose the program. Melanie Lekasevic reports in Capital Region Independent Media that the Wholesome plant in Ravenna is tearing down some of its structures and building a new access road. The company is spending $4.5 million on construction at the cement plant in southern Albany County and said it is doing it just out of the kindness of its heart. Robert McGeehy, Director of Environment and Land at Wholesome, said, quote, "This is not spurred by any action other than us just wanting to be better neighbors than we have been in the past," unquote. The skyline in Ravenna will change slightly as the company tears down structures they are no longer using. Quote, "The reclamation will take place using modern methods to dismantle equipment safely," unquote, McGeehy said. Quote, "No explosives whatsoever will be used. Obviously, we are very close to the school, so that was the biggest thing for us, this project, zero use of explosives. All the processes and methods that are employed will minimize any vibration, dust, noise, etc., unquote. The company says it will monitor air quality during the deconstruction, which should be completed by the end of the year. Wholesome also is building a new access road for the quarry to redirect truck traffic off portions of Jarvis and Mountain Roads and onto plant-owned roads and county streets. Quote, "Reducing truck traffic on these roads will improve air quality, reduce noise, and improve overall quality of life for residents along the roadway," unquote, according to a statement from the company formerly known as Lafarge Wholesome. Read more about this story at theupstater.com. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Robert Megna will be Governor Kathy Hochul's budget director, the third time he has served as the top official at the State Division of Budget. Megna is currently the president of the Rockefeller Institute of Government and senior advisor to the chancellor of the State University of New York, and Hochul said he won't be budget director for long. Megna was budget director under Governor David Patterson and Governor Andrew Cuomo, and has also served as the commissioner of the Department of Taxation and Finance and the executive director of the New York State Thruway Authority. Hochul said, quote, "It is imperative that we continue to make New York safer, more affordable, and more livable, and I know Bob's expertise will help us move these critical priorities forward. I am deeply thankful for the work of Acting Budget Director Sandra Beatty, who did an excellent job preparing the executive budget proposal, and the entire hardworking team at the Division of the Budget," unquote. Megna replaces Robert Mujica, a Cuomo employee, who left to become a financial official for Puerto Rico. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, March 1st. Local early morning temperatures range from 15 degrees in Medusa to 29 in Copake. Regional average soil temperature is 34 degrees. Snow totals are in. We got 3 inches in Chatham, 3.6 in Ancrumdale, 4 in Kinderhook, 4.6 in Catskill, 5.5 in Saugerties, and 6 in Cairo. Roads by now are clear to wet, according to highway crews. We get a high of 41 degrees by 2 p.m. Then, light rain chances roll into the area and continue all night. We get a low of 36. Tomorrow, rain ends by noon and we see a high temperature of 48 at 1 p.m. Overnight, winds get gusty and temperatures drop to 26 degrees. Friday hits 39 degrees and we get a messy afternoon. So far, it's looking like a big overnight storm of mixed precipitation, amounting to a nasty Saturday with a couple inches of slush on the ground and a high of 35 degrees. Sunset today will be at 5:35 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:27 a.m. Looking way up, we see geomagnetic storms from the last two CMEs seem to be subsiding. Of course, we got another moderate flare yesterday, causing some shortwave blackouts over the mid and lower eastern hemisphere. A couple open coronal holes are spewing plasma that should arrive next week. Solar wind speed is currently 633.6 kilometers per second at a scant 0.7 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently getting a little better with fair conditions below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair conditions below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4.3, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 100. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
At last, a do-it-yourself fallout shelter from
Survival.
A shelter that will adequately protect you and your family from the devastating effects of
nuclear fallout and falling debris.
A Survive-All shelter is engineered and designed for simple assembly, takes just a weekend's time, and is civil defense approved.
Survive-All basement-type shelters are FHA approved. No money down, up to 5 years to pay.
Learn how easy it is to assemble a Survive-All do-it-yourself fallout shelter today.
The time is now. Protect your family against atomic attack and deadly nuclear fallout. See a Survive-All shelter today.
We'll be right back. Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Amanda.
We're going to tell you about what is playing in the theaters in our radius. I'm going to start with the Wyndham Movie Theater in Wyndham, New York, near Wyndham Ski Mountain. Right now we have Creed 3, Cocaine Bear, and Ant-Man and Wasp, Quantumania. Cocaine Bear, by the way, is Ray Liotta's last movie.
Tragic.
I'm curious about it.
Yeah, same.
To find out more about showtimes and all that, head to WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
And now I shall tell you it's playing at the Crandall Theater in Chatham. We have, as always, many titles, starting with Women Talking, A Man Called Otto, After Sun, Megan, Everything Everywhere All at Once, All That Breathes, Close, Tar, 80 for Brady, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and The Quiet Girl. And you can find the specific showtimes for those at crandalltheater.org.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you next about what's playing at Spotlight Cinemas in Hudson. That is the 8-screen movie theater on Fairview Avenue. We have Bunker, Magic Mike's Last Dance, Marlowe, Knock at the Cabin, 80 for Brady, Cocaine Bear, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, A Man Called Otto, and Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. To find out more, head to spotlightcinemas.com and click on the Hudson location.
All right, and now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at Upstate Films. So starting with the Star Cinema, which is located in Rhinebeck, we have Miguel's War, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Emily, One Fine Morning, the Oscar-nominated short films in live action, and the Oscar-nominated short films in animation, EO, and also the Oscar-nominated short films in documentary. And playing at the Orpheum Theater in Saugerties, we have The Reverend, Cocaine Bear, The Rules of the Game, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Women Talking, Magic Mike's Last Dance, Playtime, Creed 3, and there as well you can catch the Oscar-nominated short films in live action and in animation. And you can find out more information about those specific showtimes at upstatefilms.org.
Gorgeous. All right, last but not least, I'm going to tell you about what's playing in Hudson's TSL, or Time and Space Limited. As always, there's a lot of stuff playing, so I encourage you to head to timeandspace.org and look at their whole calendar. But now playing this week is Close, The Forger, Roberto Rossellini's Rome, Open City, Rules of the Game, a documentary called Hudson America, and EO, which I really want to see, James Baldwin Abroad, and Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Like this. Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
After many failed legislative efforts, the secretary seeks to write off nearly $500 billion in loans for over 40 million borrowers. No statute authorizes this sweeping action.
On Tuesday, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in two cases relating to President Joe Biden's student loan debt relief program. Biden v. Nebraska aims to understand whether states have the judicial standing to challenge the program and if the program exceeds the statutory authority of the Secretary of Education. Missouri, Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, and South Carolina have joined the suit. A central issue in Missouri is whether the state's higher education loan authority would lose revenue from student loan forgiveness, making it less able to fund its own financial aid program. Meanwhile, Department of Education v. Brown tackles whether the relief plan had any basis in the 2001 Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students Act. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar said the respondents' case goes against what they'd expect from a win.
On standing, respondents' asserted injury is a complete mismatch for the relief they seek. They claim to want greater loan forgiveness than the plan provides, but they ask this court to hold that the HEROES Act doesn't authorize loan forgiveness at all.
The House Foreign Affairs Committee examined reports Chinese officials are weighing whether to provide aid to Russia in the war against Ukraine. Earlier, the committee announced legislation authorizing the president to ban TikTok, a social media app controlled by a China-based firm. Committee Chair Michael McCaul addressed other shows of strength China has used in recent weeks.
From using a spy balloon to surveil some of America's most sensitive military sites, to their theft of upwards of $600 billion of American IP every year, much of which goes into their military, to their continued military aggression and expansion in the Indo-Pacific.
The newly formed House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party called former National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster to testify. Committee Chairman Mike Gallagher said the committee will not allow the Chinese Communist Party to lull the U.S. into complacency or submission. And the House Homeland Security Committee held a hearing on immigration and border policy, specifically to highlight how it affects families with members who've died from overdosing on fentanyl. While Republicans have been working to link immigration and border crossing to drugs, the Cato Institute finds 77% of drug smugglers are U.S. citizens, not illegal immigrants. Representative Clay Higgins of Louisiana expressed his disdain for how issues with the southern border have only grown in recent years.
We want citizens of every land to come to this country legally. Our border is wide open and out of control, and Americans are dying because of it.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Today we're reporting on the Wyoming legislature's attempt to end crossover voting in primary elections and a recently killed bill to allow municipalities to use ranked choice voting. The Casper Star Tribune reports that House Bill 103, which restricts the deadlines for changing party affiliation before a primary, is headed to Governor Mark Gordon. For Wyoming's 30,000 unaffiliated voters or voters wishing to switch parties, the deadline closes the day after the candidate must file, meaning most voters won't even know what candidates are running. Current rules allow changing affiliation on or before Election Day. Although this isn't the first attempt to restrict crossover voting in Wyoming, a 2022 effort by Democrats to vote in the Republican primary to support Representative Liz Cheney in the midterms may have motivated passage. The Democrats' attempt didn't come close, with Cheney garnering only 30% of the vote. In January, a House committee killed HB 49, a bill allowing ranked choice voting for Wyoming municipalities. Proponents touted successes in Alaska and Maine, but skeptics said RCV was too complicated. Where it's implemented, RCV has proven to engage more voters and make primary races more congenial. 80% of voters find it easy to use. There's no word on whether the governor will sign the change of affiliation bill. Links to articles and an explainer on the types of primary elections can be found at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Your hosts, Randall Martin and
Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist.
So welcome aboard. And we have another great guest here.
Yes, we do. And that is Mr. Bill Fisher. No stranger to the folks in the Columbia County area, but since we broadcast worldwide on the World Wide Web, we just want to give him a minute to introduce himself And as you heard in our pre-introduction, he is the Columbia County Fair Housing Officer. Welcome back, Bill. You've been with us many times over the last couple of years, and we're so glad you're able to come back again. Would you just take a moment, give a self-introduction to our audience of listeners about who you are, something you'd like them to know?
Yes, thank you, Pastor Kim and Brother Randall. Thank you for having me on. My name is, Pastor Kim said, is Bill Fisher. I am the Fair Housing Officer for Columbia County. The COVID-19 pandemic and some of the evictions that folks have had to face and so forth. But my job is principally to assure that none of the residents in Columbia County are getting any kind of unfair treatment in the housing market. And that is as far as evictions are concerned, foreclosures, anything to do with the repairs, warranty of habitability. Landlords have to give a tenant a safe and sanitary apartment. And there are rules to cover that, as well as federal rules regarding fair housing and discrimination, and also the Division of Human Rights of New York State even expands upon the federal rules. So I am here, you know, to take calls of any of the folks that seem to feel that they are being mistreated in housing, and hopefully point them in the right direction. So if I can't answer all of their questions, that we have resources that we can refer them to that will, such as the Legal Aid Society of Northeastern New York and Common Ground, places where they can get help in the answers that they're looking for. I do return all my calls at least within 24 hours, because people who are threatened with eviction or have a housing problem, you know, there's great anxiety that is, created over that. So the earlier that we can get to their questions, the better off they are. I am assisted by a 18-member Fair Housing Board. Kim is familiar with that. She served on that board for many years. And these are all volunteers who will assist me in the situations that we face in housing. So basically, that's my job. I report to the County Government Committee of the Board of Supervisors and keep them updated on any of the problems that we are seeing in Columbia County.
That's wonderful, Bill. I tell you, you are just so good at this now. Well, you did very well on the first time around, actually. But I hope everybody had a chance to hear what you were saying. And if you missed anything, we'll give you information where you can contact Bill and call him later on. But he has a wealth of knowledge, experience, and resources. So he can get you tuned in. But before we go further into, our conversation about housing today, we have someone who is relatively new to the board. He was on the board for a year or two before he became the chair of the board in the retirement of Teresa Mayhew, who has been on the program as well a couple of times before her retirement. So, Dominic.
Good afternoon, Kim. Good afternoon, Randall. Thanks for having me on today. I guess I'll do a little background and housekeeping.
Yes.
I'm currently the chairman of the Housing Advisory Board. I've been on there for maybe about 4 or 5 years. My current position as a program coordinator for the Independent Living Center of the Hudson Valley. So I do a range of different things to advocate for people with disabilities. We also have someone in the office that assists seniors from Columbia and Greene counties in providing connection with services. But what I do at the as a program coordinator is a range of things. When it comes to housing, you know, I would advocate for if someone is discriminated against due to their disability in housing, or if they're discriminated against in work, or I also advocate for youth in school if there's barriers, to assist them to removing those barriers. I would say that sitting on the Housing Advisory Board, you know, has opened my eyes to a lot of different issues that I think that are very important and that we need to really think back to how we can resolve some of these things. But I am very happy to be here.
Wonderful to have you here. And we're going to have you back as a to talk about the Independent Living Center. I know that your predecessor, I can't even think of her name now. She retired, I think, but she had been on as well. And you all certainly do some wonderful work in the community as well as the other independent living centers around our nation. So let's just jump into, you have something, we have something coming up real soon in March, the Landlord Tenant Forum. Can you talk a little bit about that, Bill?
Yeah, I think, well, Dominic and I have worked together on that. Dominic is making up a flyer. We're contacting people for the panel. And I think Dominic can comment a little bit more on where we are with the flyer and some of the people that we have agreed to contact. So,
sure. So the flyer should be done hopefully by tomorrow afternoon with some updates. But the forum is March 29th for the public 6 to 8 at the Hudson High School in their library. During that forum, we'll also be judging the poster contest. That there's still time to enter third and fourth graders for schools in Columbia County to enter the poster contest. Contact their school for any information about that. Their deadline for that is March 22nd. But as with the forum, it looks like we're going to have 5 or 6 panelists. We're confirming up some key players, but one would be someone from the court system dealing with evictions. What would be for legal aid, firming up those individuals, and one would be for Section 8, and one would be, which is new for the forum, and I think is very important, is someone from the insurance to talk about rental insurance and how important it is to have rental insurance and the benefits of rental insurance. And also we're going to have hopefully a landlord perspective to be on the forum. I believe that's it. If I'm missing someone, I apologize. But we're going to have someone from the office for the agent. So it's a range of people that are individuals that are important to housing in Columbia County, and that somehow everyone could get information from and get some solid information on these, you know, programs and some issues. And the last time it was very successful, the forum we had a couple of years ago, and I'm hoping for the same with the attendees and panelists that Bill has put together, and it should be a great informational time.
Yes, it will be. Go ahead, Bill.
Go ahead. Well, we've been successful in getting the Hudson High School Library as the venue for the forum. We have their approval, and that's going to be on March the 29th. We've got it set up so that the HAB members can be arriving around 4 o'clock. From 4 to 6, we'll be doing some prep work, and we'll also be judging the posters that the students will be submitting. From 6 to 8, we will open it to the public for the panelists to inform the public and also take questions and so forth. So we have the area library from 4 p.m. until 8:30.
Now, first of all, I want to thank you guys for coming on and sharing this great information. I just want to ask you, in your experience, what are most people, what kind of complaints are you hearing? What are most people coming in and telling you, and how are you able to help them with it?
Well, I would say that, a lot of people, when they get a notice of eviction, there's a 5-day notice the first time they miss a rent payment. There's a 14-day notice after that. And the 14-day notice is kind of scary because it'll say either pay up or get out of the property. And I encourage people all the time, and I know Kim has heard this, don't self-evict. Just because you get a notice that the landlord wants you out in 14 days or wants you out in 30 days or 60 days, don't self-evict, because if you're not out by that time, you become a holdover tenant. And at that point, and only at that point, if the landlord has done everything, dotted all his I's, dotted all the T's, can they take you to court? So, it's important that these people don't panic. That's one of the reasons why I really try to get back to them very, very quickly, because they don't know this. They don't have this information. And it's really scary when you get a 14-day notice that says, either pay up or get out. And don't get out, don't self-evict, because only the court can set the date when the tenant has to be out for an eviction. So that's one big thing. The other thing is warranty of habitability. That's a very important thing, because if people aren't getting the repairs that they should be getting, and these things are the obligation and the liability of the landlord to do these things, that there are complaint forms to the Attorney General. There are other things that you can do. You can withhold your rent. I don't always encourage that, but the law says you can. And until these repairs are done, you can make the repair yourself and send the landlord a bill. If it's an emergency type thing, the landlord has a responsibility to do that immediately. And then other things that aren't emergencies, he has, maybe 2 weeks or 30 days to do. If they don't do it, I encourage them to call the local code enforcement officer, who will write them a letter. By New York State law, they have to follow through. The code enforcement officer has to follow through on these things. Another thing is rent increases. The rents are going up all the time. The average rate in monthly rent in Columbia County is about $1,500. And I get people who are now paying $1,100 that are being increased to $1,400. Don't know how they're going to do that. And under the new laws that went into effect in June of 2019, the landlords have to give the tenants the proper notice. It goes by the length of residency. If someone's been in occupying an apartment or a house for more than or less than a year, the landlord can give 30 days. If it's more than a year, it's 60 days. If it's up to 2 years or more, it's 90 days. So these new laws have given tenants a lot more wiggle room to find another place if they're facing any kind of eviction because they can't afford the rents. There are no rent controls in this area. Like you have in New York City, you have rent controls and rent stability. We don't have that here. People call me and say, can my landlord raise my rent $300 a month? And I have to say, in this area, there are no rent controls. It's whatever the landlord and tenant agree upon. So those are the kind of things. Of course, in the wintertime, I get complaints about, lack of snow removal by where it is the landlord's obligation, particularly in you know, in multiple housing, and also heating problems. There are strict laws in New York State which a landlord must provide heat during certain times of the day when the temperatures are below a certain temperature. It's a little complicated, but I definitely will call a landlord if there's heating problems or maybe snow removal problems, because some of these complexes, they're senior housing, and the seniors have a lot of difficulty in getting in and out of their apartments or getting to their cars and so forth. So we got to stay right on top of those kind of things.
Thank you. From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Patricia R. Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that Ulster County has been preparing emergency responders for the possibility of a train derailing there with hazardous materials. Ulster County Executive Jen Metzger said the county for years has been training to prepare for an accident, most recently at the beginning of this month. Metzger said in a February 27th letter to town supervisors and mayors that she plans to do, and I quote, everything possible within the purview of my office, end quote, to protect communities against catastrophes similar to the February 3rd train derailment involving hazardous materials in Ohio. Ulster County has been asking that federal authorities notify them when hazardous materials are scheduled to be transported through the county and are, and I quote, demanding regulatory action at the federal level to improve rail safety and prevent such a catastrophe from happening in the first place, end quote. A major freight train line runs along the western shore of the Hudson River throughout the Hudson Valley, sometimes carrying hazardous materials. There are 39.65 miles of CSX track in Ulster County. Metzger wrote to her local officials, and I quote, we are preparing a letter to the National Transportation Security Board, Federal Railway Administration, Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, and our congressional representatives, urging that tougher regulatory standards be put in place to prevent disasters like this from occurring in the future, end quote. Metzger said they have, and I quote, a well-established hazardous material response plan, end quote, as well as, and I quote, geographic response plans, end quote, which she described as, and I quote, map-based location-specific incident plans that provide guidance to first responders to maintain situational awareness during the initial stages of incidents involving the transportation of crude oil and other hazardous substances, end quote. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson says he's running for a third two-year term, but might not finish his term if elected, as he is considering challenging fellow Democrat Assembly member Dee Dee Barrett for her seat in the state legislature. Johnson said, and I quote, people need to feel that elections matter, and they have to feel that the person that you're putting in charge has their best needs and interest in heart, end quote. Johnson said he will continue to focus on creating needed affordable housing if he is reelected as mayor. The Working Families Party has endorsed Johnson's reelection efforts. Andy Kaiser of the Capital District chapter of the New York Working Families Party said, and I quote, Kamal has focused on creating a more equitable and affordable Hudson where all families have what they need to thrive, end quote. Read more about this story in Columbia Green Media. Melanie Lekasevic for Capital Region Independent Media interviews Dr. Dorothy Urschel, the new president and CEO of Columbia Memorial Health Hospital in Hudson. Urschel, who took over January 1st, outlines plans and goals in the interview, but does not mention restoring child birthing services there. In 2019, the hospital ended birthing services, forcing pregnant women locally to trek to Albany, Dutchess County, or Massachusetts for medical help. Urschel said, and I quote, for me, I will look to develop centers for excellence. We provide a lot of great care. My centers for excellence will revolve around breast health, women's health, and urogynecology, orthopedics, pain management, gastroenterology, and, of course, primary care, end quote. The hospital, like many others, currently faces a shortage of employees. Urschel said, and I quote, ultimately we need more professionals entering the pipeline. That means building more capacity for training programs for nurses, radiology technicians, and for skilled physicians, end quote. Read more about this story in theupstater.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Residents of Troy and environmental advocates have devised a plan to remove lead pipes from the city's water system. The Get the Lead Out plan aims to eliminate the estimated 14,000 lead pipes in the city. While this could cost the city over $70 million, the plan suggests using readily available funds to tackle some of the costs. Specifically, residents are demanding a $500,000 grant from the state's Department of Health finally be used for lead service line replacements. The grant was originally awarded to the city in 2018, but the money was never used. Robert Hayes with Environmental Advocates of New York says this plan can serve as a model for other cities dealing with lead pipes.
So what's happening in Troy right now needs to happen in Buffalo, Syracuse, and Albany and New York City, and everywhere in between. We hope that Troy, kind of showing a successful example of replacing lead pipe, it can be a model that's adopted statewide.
According to 2021 data from the National Resources Defense Council, New York has over 360,000 lead pipes across the state. In 2021, lead levels in Troy's water were higher than the Environmental Protection Agency's 15 parts per billion when the state takes action to remove it. While the plan provides a clear guide as to what comes next for the city of Troy, Hayes says there will be challenges to accomplishing what it says, especially locating all the lead pipes in Troy.
The city still does not know where all of the lead pipes are located in Troy, and many homeowners wouldn't likely think to go down to their basement and check to see if the pipe coming through their basement wall is made of lead. We certainly know where some of these lead pipes are, but not all of them.
There isn't widespread knowledge of where the lead pipes are, and Hayes adds it can be challenging for homeowners to know if they're at risk. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Wednesday, March 1st. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobil in Cairo has gas at $3.35 a gallon. That's the lowest according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is a 34 on Wednesday. The UV index is a 3, which is considered moderate but high for the winter. The water temperature in the Hudson River in Albany is just above 38 degrees. And over the past 10 years on March 1st, it's averaged just above 36 degrees. So it's about 2 degrees warmer than usual this year. National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 40% chance of rain after 2 p.m., mixing with snow after 5 p.m. There should be cloudy skies later in the day with a high of 37 and a wind from the southeast 5 to 9 miles per hour spinning local windmills. On Wednesday night, again, there is a 40% chance of rain, snow, freezing rain, or sleet before 2 a.m. Then it just should be rain, snow, or sleet. Mostly cloudy is the forecast with a low around 30 and a southeast wind 8 to 11 miles per hour. Then on Thursday, rain is likely before noon. There could be an afternoon isolated shower after that. But cloudy skies will prevail with a high of 45 and a southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour, becoming northwest 17 to 22 miles per hour. And wind gusts could be as high as 33 miles per hour on Thursday for those windmills. Thursday night should be cloudy with a low around 21 and a cold northwest wind 17 to 22 miles per hour with gusts as high as 33 miles per hour. Then on Friday, there's a 50% chance of snow after 1 p.m. with cloudy skies and a high of 35. We're not sure how much snow is coming Friday and Friday night, but it is coming and we will keep that under watch. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.
I'm a little bit corny, I'm a wild flower waiting for you. Broadcasting tower waiting for you. And I'm sending out this signal here.